He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
We got to talk about Darvin because I liked what he did for chunks of this one. Reddish did not play in this game.
Yeah.
And I was really nervous given the way that Brandon Ingram was scoring that Darvin would kind of overreact and put Cam out there to try to contend with that. He stayed away from that. You did get Gabe out there. Gabe did play 13 minutes. Shockingly did not score. Just, you know, blows me away the fact that he wasn't able to get out there and impact the game offensively. Actually, the play that Anthony Davis got hurt on,
yeah, missed a layup,
occurred because Gabe is so terrible offensively. I really liked. There was even a play. I think CJ McCollum scored 5 straight points to cut a lead from like 22 to 17. And Darvin called a quick timeout. I was like, who is this? Who is this person? So Raj, do you believe that playoff Darvin is a thing? Or do you think he just had one of those Allen from The Hangover moments where he just goes like just completely geniuses out and kills it at the blackjack table?
I've actually seen The Hangovers. That's one movie I've actually in my box. I've not seen two or three. I didn't know there's multiples. But I'm not sure. I thought Darvin coached okay last year, at least in the playoffs. So I think there's actually potential there. I'm not sure if there was something switched tonight. Maybe he's also in playoff mode. And I think there were 2 timeouts, I believe. They cut it from like 22 to 18 and another one from like 30 to 26. They were nicely used timeouts. I like the rotation tonight. I know you didn't really like Gabe out there. I think Gabe at least fights defensively and gives us an option when, you know, D'Lo's not going. It just gives you another guard to kind of throw out there. Don't really like the small lineups. I didn't really like some of the 4-3 guard units with Torian. But it looks like we've kind of fit at least this 8-9 man rotation with Gabe getting 10 to 11 minutes here. So hopefully they've kind of landed on a rotation. I also like what Darvin did. I liked our offense was flowing beautifully early on. All the screens, all the actions, the guard to LeBron screens where we were kind of using to create cuts. And I talked about the Rui baseline cuts. D'Lo was also in the short roll. Jackson Hayes, I thought, did a nice job screening and rolling as well. So I've liked our offense, how that's kind of progressed. The defensive game plan was good. We'll see. But no, I don't think like Darvin changed at all. I just think these are do or die games. He put LeBron in Anthony tonight. The Pelicans cut the lead to 17 or something in the fourth. LeBron came in 10 minutes to go. He cut his minutes short. So hopefully that's kind of a trend we'll see. We got 1 minute with LeBron and AD off the floor tonight. That's also progress. Last time it was 3 or 4. There's some progress being had at least. But no, we'll see with Darvin and his decision makings and if he's gotten any better as a coach. I still have faith that there's a good coach in there somewhere, hopefully, but we'll see. But do you think he's changed? Do you think this is playoff Darvin? He's a playoff merchant. It's a rhetorical question, really, but
because here's the thing, right? Justin makes the point here that really kind of like hammers it all home here,
sure.
Right? And he does so with a super comment, which means fuck Boston! Justin Tindall writing, the best 5 players as a starting unit finished the season at 18-6. That's 29.3% of the season. Genius job, Darvin. And it's like, and this is like what I wrote, right, for in my last thing for Lakers Daily, right, was like, everybody's really excited that they're all playing together finally and all that stuff. But it is kind of like you've been at a sporting event where where a referee is like clearly pretty bad and they finally make the right call and everybody just kind of like cheers sarcastically.
Yeah.
Right. That's essentially the vibe that's been described to me you know, not that's not like my analysis of the thing. Like that's what people have told me from within those walls. And you know, it's hard for me to like, even if this is what's actually going on, that like Darvin is capable of all of this stuff, but only does like the smart stuff when the stakes are at their absolute highest.
Sure.
It makes it so like the Lakers are going to be going into the playoffs here, right? They have to win in a one game setting to get to the two seed, where you're now going into that series without home court advantage against a team that absolutely owns you.
Sure.
And then, you know, if they don't win on Wednesday or on Tuesday, and then you're a single game away from, you know, you're a crazy shooting night from Steph Curry or the Sacramento Kings from your season being over, right? So like I don't think that he is all of those things. Like I think, you know, we got to watch the broken clock, you know, being correct game in this one. and it just happened to come at a really good time. But even if like that's how we want to feel about the guy, the fact that there is such a stark contrast between him at his best and him at his worst, makes it all the more frustrating that you have to like the much larger sample size indicates that he doesn't seem to get it.
Yeah. I think that's the tough part, because Darvin's kind of feeling these two narratives, right, that he's kind of succeeding in which he's a coach that believes in his players to the extreme extent, right? And like, what does that mean? I'm with you during your worst time, so I get the best of times eventually. And I think he kind of stuck, like, if we're going to do a full referendum on this season and autopsy on this season, I'm sure, and the Taurean Rui kind of lineup change is really where the fork in the road of the season turned. And really what that was like, hey, I'm going to stick with you, Taurean, and I'm going to stick with you, Cam Reddish. And that was obviously the wrong decision. But I mean, if you look at last year, the way that turned was he saw, hey, I stuck with Lonnie Walker, right? Lonnie did not play for the whole end of the season because we had a trade deadline that brought in another guard that had to get minutes to. And so Lonnie Walker plays game four and goes out and drops 25 or whatever he drops, and beats the Warriors. So there's like two parts of that. And the part with Darvin that hurts the most is he had the answer in front of him the whole time. Front office also paid that option. Like, it made it very easy. It's not like Rui and Taurean make the same money and you have to kind of decide. And the front office kind of made that decision for you. Vando's injury is a nice kind of butterfly effect of what could have happened. But yeah, that's kind of in the past. We've talked about, you know, spilled milk theory and all that stuff on this show. But I think, like, at least last year, me and you sat here after every playoff game and dissected the moves and the analysis and what the correct moves were. And I think, like, buy and hold in the first two series, he made the right adjustments, honestly. The adjustment to put, I bring this up all the time, but the adjustment to, you know, put Vando on Draymond Green so you can, you know, switch the Steph Draymond pick and roll, the adjustment to like to empower Austin to be more of an on-ball creator in the Memphis series because of the way they were defending, because the way Dylan Brooks was leaning on LeBron. Like, I think those are adjustments that, you know, a good coach would make. I think Darvin's fall is going to be this season of just the Rui Taurean kind of mix up there, which I think both of us have said Taurean was actually a logical pick. If you had to like use logic to kind of pick it, just he stuck with it too long, and that will be his demise. Most likely. Demise sounds so serious, but it
sounds like experience. we'll see how, you know, Tuesday goes, and we'll see how, you know, this all plays out and who the Lakers face and all of those things. My larger point here is that, like, this all could have been avoided had they just, like, did the smart thing from the get-go, you know? And, sure. I also don't want to look back on last year's run and with, like, completely rosy-colored glasses, because it also took a while for Darvin to make some of the adjustments that needed to be made in some of those series, right? Like, maybe the Lakers don't get swept in that Denver series. They probably don't win. Denver was just a better team. But like they rip off, you know, a game here and there by not waiting until game four to start Rui, right? With your season absolutely on the line. It was really evident really early that D'Lo didn't have it in that series. And I think he still stuck with him like a game or two too long in that one too, right? And You know, look, we'll see how this all turns out. Maybe playoff Darvin is a thing. And look, it also really, really helps that in these games, you have a fully engaged LeBron James, right?
Absolutely.
The reason that I think Darvin has to be fired this upcoming offseason is because, you know, if you bring him back, you're not going to have a fully engaged LeBron James right from the get-go of the next season. And in this one, like with the setting being what it was today, it's not like LeBron isn't going to play hard in that kind of a game. It isn't like LeBron isn't going to play hard in the playoffs. And it isn't like Anthony Davis is going to play hard in the playoffs. Like I think, you know, what you're looking at here is a team that is very capable of, you know, outperforming some of the shortcomings that are placed upon them, because their two stars are so incredible. And I'm kind of sort of sick of hoping that that's what they do, right? Like I'm sick of basically asking LeBron and AD to make up for the head coach.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think a part of it that you just brought up is the engagement on defense. And I think you just saw tonight, and you saw in the in-season tournament, and you see in other big games, when LeBron is engaged defensively, the team, that's how the kind of team moves, sadly. Like the team kind of moves on LeBron's engine. And when LeBron is engaged defensively, this team is world-class better than it is when he's not. And that's a tough thing. And I'm not trying to give bail for Darvin, because the amount of money I have just would not make it to get him out. But the bail that I could provide would not.
You're paying me back for this, right? Like,
it just would not be enough.
Once you get out, like, I'm getting that ASAP, right?
The amount I could provide just would not be it. But no, I think that is the tough thing for a coach to kind of work around, is having a guy who's going to play his 30, you know, 6 minutes, just going to wax and wane defensively. I'm not blaming LeBron for that. That's just the situation the Lakers in. When you start two guards, as much as I think Austin has improved on the defensive end, you start two guards who are not, you know, above average to average defensive players, and you start them with Torian Prince as well, which compounds the situation. You have four guys in there and Anthony Davis. I think that's a tough place for a coach to kind of make a rotation out of. And I think that's why you see Cam Reddish get inserted into the starting lineup. You see wacky things like Cam and Torian, or whoever it was, starting for Austin and D'Lo. And the D'Lo point in the last playoffs, Anthony, like, that's so tough to have your starter who's playing 30 plus minutes a game, having big shots, right? The shot against the Warriors, the two threes against Memphis, the game six against Memphis that he just had before that series. I think it's really tough to go from that to then benching that starter, you know, one or two games into a conference final. That's a really tough thing, especially for a new head coach who doesn't really have the resume to do that, right? He does not have the credibility to do that yet.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose D'Lo. Once you do that, you lost him. And that's what happened. Like, you bench D'Angelo Russell in a playoff game, you absolutely lose him. So that part, I have a tough time kind of going with, especially in the Denver series. Starting Rui was obviously the correct route. And this is a long kind of thing we can go in later about Darvin. I just, the season's he's going to be, you know, outed as a coach because of what he did to start this season. And I think that's a really tough situation to be in. I'm sure if you gave truth serum to Darvin, he's like, hey, look, like, I didn't know what team I was getting. Like, my guards could not shoot for the first 2 months of the season. Like, I had to make a decision. I was fighting for my life, as much as I said the marathon quote in December. Like, I was fighting for my coaching life at that point, which maybe made some of these decisions tougher for him. So we'll see what happens on Tuesday. Hopefully the Lakers win another two rounds. And, you know, this is a different discussion in a few months here.
Last thing we got to touch on before we get out of here, and it's a quick update, but AD, his quote after the game, no doubt that I'm going to play on Tuesday.
Nice.
You know, it was apparently just kind of seized up on him. He went up to I can remember, you know, the play exactly when it happened, right? Gabe misses a layup, and AD went to go put it back up on the rim. And as he was doing that, got a little bit of a shove in the back from, I think, Larry Nance Jr., who was behind him there on the play. This is now two straight games where AD had to leave the game because of contact at the rim that wasn't called. Like that's just, that's insane that like they just, they've bungled that twice. Sure. But yeah, he says he's going to be good to go. Darvin Ham said he was really optimistic that AD was going to be good to go. Apparently it just kind of like seized up on him there. Now, if it is a spasm, I've dealt with spasms. They don't tend to be all that isolated. Hopefully this is one of those that it just happened to be like a bad motion that, mm-hmm. that like kind of caught on him there. You do have, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and then most of Wednesday to recover, between, you know, or no shit. I don't know why I've blanked mentally here. I guess you do.
You're trying to sit him out. Day. That's why you want him to sit out Tuesday. You're just skipping already to Thursday of, so he can play that game healthy.
I mean, look, that'd be four full days to definitely recover, you know, like four full days to like take it nice and easy, recover and make sure that you're 150% for that second game. Maybe Jackson Hayes plays like another one of those crazy Jackson Hayes games and you're able to beat the Pelicans without AD. Wouldn't that be funny? But yeah, I also like another point that a Twitter follower made was that, you know, had the Lakers garbage units not been such garbage all season, that maybe AD gets out of the game like a minute or two earlier, right? I think the injury happened with about 3 minutes to go in the fourth, and the Lakers were up by like 17, I think, because he only played.
It was more like six minutes left. It was still a good chunk of change, a good chunk of time left. I think we were up 19, but AD had to play during that stretch. There was there's no way he wasn't. Like again, if we had a better bench, maybe, but 19 point lead with 6 minutes left against a New Orleans team that's very wounded in terms of the lead, I think he was going to play regardless.
Yeah, I mostly agree. I 100% agree as far as the context of this season, right? And having seen how bad the Lakers are in general when AD isn't on the court defensively, and B, how bad the end of the bench guys are, right? Like they have been terrible all season. To a certain extent, like that, he definitely had to be in the game there. I guess it's more, you know, if the Lakers had been able to maintain the 30 point lead, and if the guys at the end of the bench weren't so bad, maybe AD isn't out there for that moment. And look, like shit happens, man. Like that's sure. Why you got to take care of business when he is healthy and all that stuff. So that when shit happens, you have some margin for error for that shit to happen. And you know, fortunately, nobody seems all that concerned about it. I was I was pretty devastated. I'm not going to lie. When you look there and the way he walked off of the court, you know, and he looked like me, like he looked like that's how I walk. When I have to, you know, lift my giant son off of the ground and I do it like slightly incorrectly, like that's how I walk for the next like week or so. And so anytime Anthony Davis reminds me of me, I'm going to be a little nervous. But apparently nobody was all that, concerned about it after the game. And hopefully it's another game like this, you know, that the Lakers are able to kind of get through relatively pain-free, and they are able to handle their business early on Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go in believing AD's fine because the other world just is not an enjoyable place to live in. So I'm just gonna believe that he's healthy, and he's also one of my big Anthony check marks against Denver. Of my our stars weren't fully healthy last year as well. Like that's another kind of check I'm going to use in terms of the Denver matchup. We have LeBron with two good, I think he had an ankle injury last year. I forgot exactly the injury that he was kind of nursing, but we have LeBron with two, you know, good ankles, knock on wood, don't kill me. And Anthony Davis relatively healthy, because I remember AD came back a little earlier than his injury was supposed to be last season. So hopefully we get not even, because that infers that Denver won unfairly last year, but we get, you know, our stars healthy in that playoff matchup as well. And also I would rather have five games to prepare for Denver. Like, I'd rather, I mean, 5 days to prepare for Denver and 5 days off over playing Thursday and then playing Denver in 2 days. So, get that time, OKC. Prepare. No, OKC, you don't. Oh, I, you're right. Yes, yes. Yeah, I'd well, that's fair. but
I'm telling you, man, the games against OKC haven't been all that close this year. Yeah. And it's like they are literally the youngest one seed ever.
Yeah.
You like they lose game one at home, and now all
would
of a sudden
be favored in that series. Do you think the Lakers would be favored?
No,
I think that's fascinating. You don't think so?
No,
I think that's very interesting because that stat came out. I saw it too. There, I think 23.9 is the total year's age, which absolutely incredible for them to get the one seed.
Yeah.
With that, but what. As instantly as I saw that, I said, bring them on. I would love to have OKC, like as much as I like that. But I'd rather have LeBron.
I feel like if we sat here and talked for 20 more minutes, I think by the time we were done, you'd be like,
I mean, I'd rather have LeBron and AD get 5 days fully off than 3 days.
But the Lakers are also terrible after big break, like long breaks. They have been like after the All-Star break, remember, like looked ugly there. It's just, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, we're gonna take game one. Like tonight was to me a very much of an indicator of how we're about to approach these next few games. Like the Memphis game was a serious, let's just run this clock until we're done. Like, let's just get the win and get the hell out of here. Tonight felt more of a very business-like approach to what's coming. So I would not want to tank that game. If it happens, Anthony, great. Like, I'll enjoy it as much as, you know, we are. That game is going to be absolutely hell against the Warriors and the Kings. I don't think you're realizing how that 3.5 hour hell that's going to be to watch that playing game where you could literally go home. So I would rather not, you know, endure that. But if we played OKC, I wouldn't be mad. I think it's going to be Denver. And whatever it is, whatever opponent is, whatever hurdle life throws at you, you go at it with 100 miles an hour speed. So if it's Denver, we, you know, run right to them. We don't go and hide and, you know, try to run away, shriek at the side of it. I can't believe Billy
Mack. I'm at least wearing camo. Okay. Like I'm at least like trying to blend into my surroundings. Like I'm just trying. I'm just like
saying D-Lo's going to be wearing camo. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, D-Lo's going to have camo on. That's mean. That's not nice. Yeah.
D'Lo walks in. Oh, Bruce Brown isn't here still? All right. Let's go. Let's give this a shot. And then KCP guards him. Fuck. This is just
revenge season, baby. Yes.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge. I don't think so. Like Phoenix, nothing matters, right? With Phoenix winning or losing here.
Phoenix gets the sixth seed. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Lakers definitely are playing the New Orleans Pelicans again on Tuesday, to be absolutely clear. And you know, we'll hopefully AD's back doesn't seize up on him again. And hopefully this is just a one-time kind of thing and he can fully recover. And Tuesday's going to be fun, man. Like, I do kind of like the fact that the Lakers beat the shit out of them. And so that crowd isn't going to come into that game, like with any confidence whatsoever. I like the fact that, you know, LeBron get like, as much as we're going to look at like, as much as Willie Green is going to make adjustments and stuff like that, LeBron was like absolutely masterful in terms of handling the offense here. Right. And, you know, D'Lo, I think he only finished with like 4 assists or whatever. And I think Austin only had 2. LeBron spent a lot more time on the ball in this one. And I just think like, he just kind of sees, you know, barbecue chicken, you know, LeBron getting into the post, right? He knows that nobody there has enough in their back pocket to, you know, stop him from getting to his spots if he goes into the post. So I think there's enough there for the Lakers to replicate that they'd be able to take care of it. But, you know, if they don't, couldn't be the worst thing. What? Who said that? Like, who?
You said that.
I
don't put that on me at all. That was that was all you. No, I am not with that at all. I forgot to mention this. I just before we go, there was a stat that came up from Crumpled at Crumpled Jumper Todd Whitehead, who you know is really good at posting these type of numbers. Said he posted the most. I don't know if you saw this, Anthony, but most efficient on ball scores. And I just wanted to ask you. Most efficient on-ball scores with among the top 50 highest volume on-ball scores. So the guys who get the most kind of on-ball possessions, these are the most efficient. Austin is 14th on this list in the league. And all the rest of these guys all make $30 million plus. I think that's interesting. I think Austin's kind of looked at in an interesting prism amongst fans. I think he's having a better season than people realize. He's also played 82 games this year after doing the USA summer experience. I just want to ask you, does that match your eye test as well? Is Austin one of the most efficient on-ball guards in the league? The turnovers kind of get highlighted in, just because they don't look very clean and smooth sometimes with his ball handling. But I think his offense has really been on an upward trajectory ever since he kind of came back in that starting lineup. But I wanted to kind of push this to you before we end here. Does that match your eye test, I guess? Austin is 14th in the league in most efficient on-ball scores.
No, to be completely honest, not quite. I think when he really has it going, absolutely, like 1,000,000%. I wish he got to the line more this year. Like his free throw numbers, like his free throw rate, I feel like really declined from last season to this one. Some of that I think is like referees not calling as much grifty stuff. Some of it I think is spending a little less time on the ball, right? D'Lo was on the ball. I think D'Lo's usage rate is higher than Austin's, right? So,
close.
And then, you're also playing on a LeBron team. So there just aren't going to be as many opportunities. But I will say that like when he has the ball in the fourth quarter of tight games and big games or whatever, I am not even a little bit concerned. So,
right.
Like, it's not to say that I think that stat is out and out false. Like, I think there's something to it, but, at the end of the day, you're getting $30 million production from a $12 million player,
Right.
And that's going to be the case for the next couple of years.
Right, exactly. And I'm not saying like the other guys on this list are like Damian Lillard, Shea, Kawhi, Devin Booker, right? And these are guys that kind of spearhead your offense in a way that Austin doesn't have to, because he's not gaining the kind of defensive attention. But what it shows, Anthony, remember early in the year, we were doing this thing where we would just give Austin the ball at the top of the key and we're like, hey, go cook. And he's like, I'm not even in the kitchen. I'm in the freaking living room. Like, how am I supposed how am I supposed to cook right now?
I was holding a vacuum a second ago. Like,
but we really made things like we've kind of simplified the offense to where he's kind of in more advantageous situations. He's working out of pick and rolls, like he's splitting them and getting to the line, getting to the basket a little bit more. I think his threes have come a lot more off of, okay, they're going under the screen. I can step back and take my shot in time, right? I don't have to rush it. And I think his threes have looked a lot smoother. He's shooting 37% now on pull-up jump shooting threes. That number was way lower to start this year. Mm-hmm. I just think he's kind of gotten to an offensive flow, and like the turnovers are way down since, again, that time early in this year when we were kind of experimenting. We're just like, hey, Austin, go, run this unit. And that's not really the type of guard he is. So now he gets to share the floor with a Spencer Dinwiddie, with a Gabe Vincent, with a D'Lo for pretty much the entirety of the and LeBron, as you mentioned. I just think he's having a better season than I think people realize. He's averaging like 17 a game on really efficient numbers, shooting like 88, 89 from the line as well. Just at that $11 million number, that's a steal that I think, it's kind of gotten overlooked because how bad the Lakers kind of were at the beginning of this year, and the defensive shortcomings were kind of put on our guards when it was really like you knew that our guards weren't these defensive kind of stalwarts. You needed size around them. But I just want to throw that stat at you because I thought that was interesting. All the other guys on that list make like all-star superstar money, and then it's like Austin making his $11 million a year surrounded by James Harden, Paul George, Kawhi, Devin Booker, DeMar DeRozan makes like 29, so he's like right into that. But Jason Tatum, right? The names ahead of him are Tatum, Kyrie, and De'Aaron Fox. All dudes making $40 million $1 million a year, and then it's Austin's name, and then it's Dame's, which is weird. But yeah, it's
yeah, I think it's. I'm really fascinated by what they do with Austin this off season. Everybody I've spoken to is pretty adamant that he's still not going to be like. It's going to take a lot to try to like if a team asks for him, you're taking a lot of stuff off of the table if you're going to put him on it.
Right.
They love him, you know, personality wise. Like they just the Lakers love having Austin Reeves in the organization. And I do think that like they would be very confident and comfortable. Scottie Scheffler just won the Masters. Look at that. He's the best golfer I've seen since Tiger. He's so effing good. But anyway,
you could have made that name up and I would have no idea. Rory's
there. Like, but he like overlapped with Tiger. So like of this next generation, Scottie Scheffler, just like he's going to run the shit for a while. But anyway, but yeah, I this is how my brain works, man. Like it's so hard. Like I have such sports ADD that like, it's just like, oh, butterfly. But yeah, with Austin, I think that essentially the decision that the Lakers are going to have to make here, because you've seen the names that the Lakers have been attached to going into the offseason, is Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, right? Those kinds of ball dominant players who, if you're bringing that player in, the other team, one, is going to be asking for Austin, and two, you're probably best off moving Austin because you're going to run into a lot of the same issues that you had this year with Austin and D'Lo, right? I think Trey and Donovan are both better defensively than D'Lo, and maybe that makes it a little easier, but it's still like, it's still a very small, very, you know, not strong defensively backcourt that is going to get you into some issues there. And essentially what the Lakers are going to have to decide on pretty early in the offseason is, are you willing to gamble on Austin taking another step forward here so that you can go into next year with him as your primary ball handler in the backcourt? It would be Austin and a kind of secondary ball handler too, who is there to space the floor and help defend for you, right? Think of like, I think the perfect backcourt mate, ironically, would have been KCP and what he does for Denver. you know,
sure.
But like, you know, whether it's whatever direction that the Lakers go in here, a lot of it is going to kind of come back to how confident are you that Austin is going to be able to give you at $11 or $12 million next year? What percentage of, you know, Donovan or Trey's production are you going to get at 11 versus the 35 or whatever numbers that they're going to be making next season?
Right. Yeah, that's a tough part. And I think my thinking on that is not that Donovan and Trey replace Austin, because obviously those guys are better than Austin is. It's just, is that gap $25 million, and can you allocate those resources elsewhere? Because if you trade, and we can get into this obviously in the summer, but if you trade Austin, that money's just not enough. Like, you're going to need to add another core piece, right? The Lakers don't just have dead weight salary, you know, sitting in their sitting on their team anymore. So you're going to have to put a core piece like, I guess Gabe, that still probably doesn't get you to the number, but yeah, sure. No. Gabe, although people don't really want Gabe, so that'd be just the salary dump anyway. So yeah, I think he's not expiring, I'd rather.
You don't think this year either?
No, he's not. He has another year on his deal, so year two Gabe will be hopefully better. But we'll get into that after. But I think like if you're gonna move Austin and bring one of those guys, I think you're gonna open up holes elsewhere that you have to kind of put resources into, and it's really tough to do that when you're signing minimum guys, right? LeBron and AD are gonna be signed at such a number that you're not gonna really have cap space to operate within, and those first round picks are probably gone in whatever deal that you're making for these guys. So I think it's an interesting way to look at it. It's just Austin's obviously the name that you're gonna throw into every trade because that's the guy that teams want, but I would like at least some thought to go into who you dump him for is important to me. And I think Trae Young, trade him for, because like, those are actually good. Those are good players you're getting back.
Like,
sure.
If you get good players Mitchell, back, it's hard to call it a dump, but yeah, I mean,
that's fair.
It's a big decision.
Yeah.
But that decision is coming a full playoffs away, hopefully. The Lakers have the play-in that they are looking forward to on Tuesday. and they have a lot of work between now and the offseason to hopefully get done. And I'm legitimately curious how all of this plays out. You know, I'm not quite where you are. Like, I'm not nearly as optimistic about the Denver series potentially as it sounds like you are. But there are some factors that you could point to where that gap may have shrunk just a little bit. I would feel so much better about it if they had Vando, but reality is they aren't going to.
Fair.
We'll kind of see what that looks like if the Lakers were able to take care of business on Tuesday. As promised, I'm going to be working over the next 48 hours to try to bring in somebody who covers the New Orleans Pelicans to talk about that game on Tuesday. So you have that to look forward to this weekend. I'm also you can hear my son is stoked about this. He's just thrilled back there. He's saying bring on Denver back there. So yes. He also just might be excited by the amount of times I've said Nuggets. Like, he's probably thrilled. Oh, now he's crying because I called him fat. So until the next time you guys hear from me, and by the way, 2,300, almost 2,400 people tuned into this thing between Twitter, between YouTube, all of that good stuff. So please do hit that subscribe button. Please do head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge to subscribe to the content that we're putting here on the YouTube channel as well. If you're listening in the morning via podcast, hit that subscribe button wherever you get it, preferably Odyssey. And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Raj Chapalu. This has been the Lakers Lounge. Rest up, AD. Rest up. You know, take it easy. Consider it. You know, just think.
Bring on Jokic. Let's do it.